All right, welcome to another Celtic Stuff Live post-game podcast. It's been a while. We were waiting for wins, but we decided to do it anyway with the home-and-home against the Chicago Bulls. Joining us tonight is Matt. He's the Bloggable Master. What's going on, my friend?
Hey, Justin. How you doing?
Doing very good, except for the fact that the Celtics drop one on the road, and you guys steal our colors. We lose 95-87. I don't know about you, but I was completely lost out there. They look just like Boston's home jerseys. And so many times, even though I was forewarned before the game, so many times I found myself losing track of gameplay.
Yeah, it happened. It was definitely weird. Not even the uniforms, but they handed out green shirts before the game. And they had shamrocks on them. It was bizarre.
Wow, so you were at the game, and it was kind of like you'd been transplanted to Boston, and yet the green team wins, but it's the wrong green team if you're a fan of the Celtics Stuff Live.
Right, it was green all over the place. They had Irish dancers in the concourse. They had a full St. Patrick's Day theme going on, and of course we all know they just wanted to sell more jerseys. So,
right, it always helps revenue to create an extra jersey to sell. There's no doubt about that. It was totally bizarre because for a minute there I thought Tyrus Thomas was a Boston Celtic, and kind of sad that he wasn't.
I can imagine. I mean, it was the whole second half, and the great thing about that game, if you're a Bulls fan, is that Tyrus Thomas played the whole second half. He got a ton of minutes, and he rarely, either, based on getting yanked or foul trouble, he doesn't play that many minutes like he did tonight, and he was in control most of the game, and he was just, abusing the Celtics front court with his athleticism.
Do you see him that aggressive that often? I just saw a player that, you're right. We all knew that before, before the draft, just watching him March Madness last year playing for LSU. We knew his athleticism was off the charts, but has he been that aggressive in the NBA? Because I saw a guy who was willing to hit the floor tonight.
He always is that way on defense. The thing about tonight was that on offense, he was usually, when he's aggressive, he's aggressive, but he's kind of in a dumb way. He hesitates too much because he's not sure of his game. And, rightfully so, because he didn't have much of an offensive polish yet. But tonight, even when he had jump shots, he would get the ball and just shoot it. He wouldn't think about it. He wouldn't try and do like a hesitation move before he rose up. And he was, he's well under control, and that helped him avoid offensive fouls for the one thing. I think he got one offensive foul on a fast break, but beside that, he was pretty under control tonight.
Yeah, rookies have that tendency where they try to do too much before the shot because they don't believe in themselves or have confidence in their abilities. We saw that from Al Jefferson a little bit, I think, on Sunday night. Too many pump fakes, not going up with the shot with his 12-footer. Tonight, I thought he played better. He still got, Ben Wallace is a great position rebounder, and he did a great job, still keeping Al Jefferson from getting good, solid rebounds and getting into the paint to do that. But offensively, Al Jefferson was able to mix it up a little bit more tonight and, get to the rack a little bit, couple of baseline moves, and was hitting his jumper. So it was nice to see Al Jefferson rebound from a difficult performance the other night, and you really can't expect Al Jefferson to have double-digit rebounds against a solid vet like Ben Wallace. But how ludicrous was Wallace's performance tonight? 19 points, 16 rebounds, 4 assists, the most shot attempts Ben Wallace has attempted in his career, 21. And I, for one, think the Celtics would have won this game if Ben Wallace had been his usual poor shooting self.
I don't know. I mean, actually, he did shoot well, but I think
he had some ridiculous shots from outside, though, too. He was 9 for 21.
And the thing was, he had 21 attempts, like you said. Ben Gordon had 7. I mean, the whole thing, it was like a complete bizarro game for the Bulls. I guess, I did see Scott Skiles' press conference after the game. He said the Celtics did a good job denying the guards. And apparently they did so to a point where even Ben Wallace was saying, hey, if I'm this wide open, might as well go for it. But it wasn't just his usual, putbacks and, two-footers. I mean, he was taking fadeaways, and he had long hooks. I mean, he was just all over the place. And it was, frankly, it was kind of scary to see.
It was scary to see. It's not what you're used to seeing from Ben Wallace. It was bizarro night. You mentioned the defense on the guards. I think Rajon Rondo did an excellent job on Ben Gordon. And the Celtics were smart to make that switch. You know, it was nice to see Delonte West back in the lineup after suffering a concussion just last week. And, you know, he shot quite well from beyond the arc. I thought he did a good job getting to the rim. He had 19 points and 2 assists on the night. And in the lineup as the shooting guard, which was kind of a surprise when we heard Delonte West was going to be inserted into the starting lineup tonight. I think most Celtics fans felt that he was going to be back in the role of point guard. I, for one, thought Rondo deserved some more minutes at the point and was happy to see Delonte West at shooting guard, because I've always felt that he's better in that role, and it gives the team a little bit more movement on offense, having a player who can play that combo guard role. So making that switch and putting West on Heinrich and then having Rondo cover Gordon, it was a good move. You know, they kind of traded places on defense and then went back into their role on offense. You said Sunday night when you called into the Celtics Stuff Live show that Rondo needs the ball in his hands. Did you feel like the Celtics rectified that issue tonight? He had 7 assists but only 3 points on 1-for-5 shooting.
Yeah, I definitely did in terms of the, and maybe not as much in terms of the execution, but, you know, the plan out there made more sense to have Rondo in the game starting and have West play off the ball, because in opposite of when they had Telfair with the ball and Rondo off the ball, I mean, West is a shooter, so you can have him play off the ball, camp out in the corner like he did in the first half, and those 3-pointers in the first half, you know, kept the Celtics close in that game and even had them tied at one point.
Let's talk a little bit about Luol Deng, because, I mean, this guy is – how come he hasn't arrived with the shoe contract yet, honestly? You know what I mean? I mean, this guy, I know he's recognized around the league, but I think he deserves a lot more recognition. He seems like a player who's willing to, on any given night, accept his role and assert himself as needed, but never overassert himself or bring down the players around him. I am – more and more impressed with Luol Deng every time I see him out there.
Yeah, the thing about Luol, he actually had a kind of a different game tonight. He was more assertive than most games, I think, because a lot of the matchups the Celtics were giving him, a lot of times he would find himself with a smaller defender, either with this thinner Gerald Green or the much shorter Rajon Rondo, where you see Luol Deng actually post up, which is something he doesn't do that often, even though he has sort of the game that would be, you know, conducive to it. He's 6'9", and he can finish with both hands, but he doesn't post up that often, and he's not assertive, which is kind of what is holding him back from being a star. Right now, he's sort of like the perfect third option. It's amazing that he gets so many points that he kind of has an efficient game in the fact that he makes his shots, but it's also kind of inefficient because all he does is take jump shots. He goes to the rack often, enough in transition. Like tonight, he had a couple of fast break dunks, but, you know, there's never a time where, say, Gordon's not playing well and Heinrich's not playing well, they can just say, all right, let's give the ball to Luol Deng for a few possessions. It doesn't quite work like that. He's more of a guy who plays off the ball, and it's very nice as a complimentary player, but, you know, to answer what can he do to make that next step, it's sort of what he did tonight. When he realizes he has a matchup that he can exploit, he demands the ball, gets down in the post, and he can finish.
You know, Celtics fans have often hoped that Kendrick Perkins can work as hard as Ben Wallace did early in his career and become a similar player. I think we saw one of Kendrick Perkins' healthier and better performances tonight. You know, his stat line, 8 points and 10 rebounds in 22 minutes. But I thought of all the Celtics' big men, he did the best job of, kind of battling with Ben Wallace for position. He's been struggling with plantar fasciitis, and he's had a real up and down kind of season. But I mean, do you see the parallels between these two players when you've had an opportunity to watch Kendrick Perkins play?
You know, I like watching Perkins play. I think he could be, you know, in a big man rotation on a good team. But I think the main difference, and you know, tonight was a game where Wallace was definitely on his game, and maybe it was because he was getting all these shots that it kept him, you know, interested on the defensive end too. Sometimes he can coast through a game, but tonight, I mean, 16 rebounds, he had 3 blocks, and him and Tyrus were all over the place. So maybe it was just a bad game to compare someone like Wallace because he had such a superstar effort tonight. But I think what tonight showed between Wallace and Tyrus Thomas is just, I mean, Jefferson and Perkins are a young front court, and they got good size, but they're just not athletes like Wallace and Tyrus Thomas are. And I mean, Wallace, sure, he gets his reputation for, you know, working hard and being an effort-based player, but he also is, you know, a fantastic athlete, which I don't think, you know, Perkins is in the least, and neither is, I mean, Al Jefferson has the sort of polished game already, but he's not an above-the-rim player like Tyrus Thomas. So I think the Bulls were able to exploit that tonight, and you saw that in a lot of the lobs that they were throwing at Thomas where, you know, Perkins and Jefferson are, they just couldn't compete with that above the rim ability tonight.
Yeah, neither one of them has, you know, Jefferson has never been known for having that leaping ability. He just has moves around the hoop, and he's getting much better at playing defense with timing. But like you said, you know, he's not an athlete or, you know, or as athletic to get, you know, he gets above the rim because he's 6'10", but not because he has leaping ability. So, you know, he had 3 blocks tonight. I thought, you know, his defense has improved significantly over the course of the season. But your point's well taken. You know,
I should give them credit. And you mentioned the blocks. And, you know, especially in the first half, that those they were doing a great job defensively. But it was more like a on-ball defense where Jefferson and Perkins would block their man. And they did a good job, especially, you know, P.J. Brown was a complete non-factor tonight because he isn't, you know, much of an athlete anymore. And Perkins was able to contest nearly every shot. And I think Brown hit, he was 1 for 6 tonight. I mean, he basically did nothing. So, you know, the on-the-ball defense is good, but what the Celtics could use is a front-court player who can come over and be the weak side defender and help on, you know, when opposing guards get to the rim or when, you know, Tyrus Thomas goes up for a block, have a guy who can be an off-the-ball shot blocker, someone who can go above the rim and challenge shots.
Yeah, you know, we don't really have a power forward that can do that. That's a really good point. I think the team misses Ryan Gomes, not that he would provide that presence per se, but he would have been able to spread the floor a little bit because he's got that jumper, and, you know, it might have opened things up for Big Al a little bit where at times things do get cluttered, and when you are outmatched in the paint, you know, strength-wise and a little bit athletically as well, it helps to have, you know, a power forward that can pull one of those guys away from the basket and, you know, have an Al Jefferson be, you know, play that center role and be a little more athletic in there.
And, you know, it's probably obviously a moot point now, but that's where when they picked up Theo Ratliff, I thought he really could help. He was a guy that they could have really used to pair up with Jefferson to just be a shot blocker where they didn't really have an athletic shot blocker before.
Yeah, it's been an unfortunate run, you know, acquiring injured vets for the Celtics. But, you know, essentially they acquired him as an expiring contract a year earlier than Rafe in hopes of making a move this summer. And I guess we'll kind of get to that in just a second. I want to look just at the overall game stats. Just looking at tonight, I think the Celtics and the Bulls struggled mightily from the free throw line. That could have been the difference for the Celtics. They only took 21 free throws, pretty close to half as much as Chicago. But, you know, shooting 50% from the free throw line isn't going to cut it. And Rajon Rondo, 1 for 4. You know, it's nice to see Rajon getting to the rack, you know, to make up for his, you know, deficient perimeter shooting. But at the same time, if he's not going to convert the free throws, it really, I mean, with defenses sagging and then him not converting, it does limit his effectiveness. The Celtics also, turnovers, 14. Not so bad for a team that does average a good amount of turnovers, you know, to Chicago's 13 turnovers. The difference being, I think, in this game was rebounding. Like you said, between athleticism and just strength and positioning on the boards, the Bulls out-rebounded the Celtics by 14, 46-32. And, you know, when you look at the stats, I mean, the Celtics actually shot better from the field. And, you know, that free throw shooting poor for both teams. You have to look at the rebounding being a major difference.
Yeah, and, you know, like you said, the athleticism kind of reflects in that, and it also does in getting more free throw attempts, because you see Tyrus Thomas had 11 free throw attempts tonight. I mean, he only made 5, and I kind of overlook you know, how many free throws you make. I just figure some games you're not going to make your free throws. I think it's more important to just show that you got there, which shows you're being aggressive, and, you know, it keeps the other team in the penalty. And, you know, with Tyrus Thomas with 11 free throws, Kirk Heinrich had, I had no idea he had 11 free throw attempts tonight. That's a great line. That's a great stat for him. Gordon with 7. I mean, it just seems when you're a team that can be, you know, quicker to the rim and forcing, you know, slower defenders to foul you, I mean, the whole game will just come easier.
Yeah, so, you know, just a little bit looking a little bit towards the future after this game, because this is the last time the Celtics and Bulls are going to match up this season. Between now and the next time we meet next season, the Celtics, obviously having Theo Ratliff, like we were talking about before, is a trade chip in the offseason, while your Bulls have lost their expiring contract because they failed to trade him before the trade deadline. How disappointed are you in that? Or, you know, do you feel like the team is, you know, just headed in a different direction than trying to acquire a veteran in the off season, anyhow?
You know, I kind of trust Pax in the sense that I'm sure if the opportunity was there where he could get something for, you know, kind of spare parts, he would have done it. I think the well-publicized Gasol trade talks, you know, hung up on Lou Alden getting traded, and if he doesn't want to trade Lou Alden in a package for Pau Gasol, I'm on board with that. That's completely fine. I think that, you know, if the opportunity was there, they would have gone for it because they needed one guy to put him over the top. I don't think it was the case where they kind of just need, you know, filler in the front court to help in this season's playoffs. Or it was more of a case where if they could get a top-notch power forward, they should go for it because that would put them, you know, in title contention, not only in the East, but in among, you know, Dallas and Phoenix eventually. I mean, if they got a Pau Gasol at the four without giving up, you know, one of their starters. But the thing about this season and keeping the guys they have is that I think that they can win the East this season. I think they're just as good. They're right there with, you know, Detroit and Cleveland. There's no team in the East that should scare the Bulls. I mean, their record this season reflects that in terms of, you know, how their point differential. I mean, they've been kind of unlucky in close games, but they have been spectacular at points where, you know, if they play well, they can beat anybody. And the fact of the matter is, nobody in the East is head and shoulders above them. So why mortgage your future for maybe a small boost when hopefully, and like you said, they kind of limited their options this offseason, but that doesn't mean they can't do a next trading deadline or, you know, anything can happen in terms of who's available in the NBA. So, no, I mean, a year ago, no one would have thought Pau Gasol was truly available. So I'm fine with them not rushing into a mistake just because they thought, you know, they were near the top of the East this year, because I think they're there anyway.
Right. They certainly wouldn't want to trade some of their blue-chip prospects just to try and make a run this season when some of those blue-chip prospects are integral to the success of the team this season as well. You know, is this also a sign that expiring contracts are not as valuable as they once were around the league?
You know, I think it depends. I mean, I think it's not as valuable as, you know, perceived, because there's the problem with a lot of owners. I mean, everyone assumes, oh, just trade this guy making $12 million for that guy making $12 million. One's expiring, and your team will be happy to take the guy with a long-term contract. But when you just talk about getting into luxury tax territory, I mean, those millions add up, and a lot of owners, you know, are definitely afraid of that luxury tax, and they don't want to accept long-term salary, no matter. I mean, look at Isaiah Thomas. I mean, he got rid of those expiring contracts. He, you know, bought out Jalen Rose, and the year before he bought out Penny Hardaway, because while they were expiring contracts and probably another team would like to acquire them, the owner of the Knicks was tired of spending all that money and getting in the luxury tax land where it's a dollar-for-dollar tax. So, I mean, I think you just have to be... The problem with what the Celtics have with Theo's expiring contract is that, you know, they're also going to pay Al Jefferson soon. They're going to have Wally's money, Pierce's money. So then you're going to get in the case where you're going to have four guys making over $10 million, you know, some of them making $15 million, luckily, well, Zerbiak's contract is up only after a year, so, you know, they won't be in true calf hell for that long. But, you know, it's kind of a factor of, you know, just because you have these guys in high salary spots doesn't mean the owners want to keep that as a high salary indefinitely.
So, yeah, so, you know, just to summarize that, it really depends on the situation at this point. You don't feel like expiring contracts have lost their value. It's just you have to look at each team individually and, you know, and the ownership as well, what position they want to put themselves in. I think you make a good point. I've been saying it for a while about Wally Zerbiak only being a year after Theo's. I think ownership, Celtics ownership, wants to make Pierce happy. I think they want to bring in a veteran as he's requested. If they can get that veteran at the right price, they'll move Theo and suffer for one season before letting Wally Zerbiak's contract expire. And another thing they can do with Wally at that point, you know, if he is able to be healthy and still provide some meaningful minutes, you know, after rehabbing from yet another surgery this season, would be able to re-sign him at probably a drastic reduction in cost and still maintain some chemistry and have a valuable vet off the bench, you know, if they are making a run to the playoffs. So there is some value to holding on to Wally and not using him as trade bait 2 years after, you know, Theo Ratliff, 2 years after this, when this offseason is really when the team needs to make a decision about, you know, do we acquire a veteran and move forward with Paul Pierce, or do we decide to go full-on youth movement and start over, which I don't think Celtics fans are really hoping for.
Yeah, it's a tough way to go about it when you say, you know, get a veteran for Theo's. Luckily, Theo doesn't make that much money. $11 million is a manageable. I think the big problem around the league is, you know, the huge expiring contracts. Like I mentioned, Jalen Rose, $15 million. That means you're going to get a player around $13 to, you know, $18 million. And when a player who makes that much money is on the trade block in the first place, I mean, obviously something's gone wrong. So I think the one thing that Theo Ratliff's contract is a great asset is for one name in particular, and that's Kevin Garnett, because Kevin Garnett makes so much money. He's so far above, you know, the maximum salary that you need those big pieces like Theo Ratliff, whereas the Bulls now don't have that major piece. It's going to be tough for them to even accumulate the salary to trade without trading half their roster. They just, I don't know, I kind of looked over it this week. I talked with Jeff Clark from Celtics blog and Kurt from Forum Blue and Gold. He runs a Lakers blog. And we kind of had a little roundtable about what would it take to get Kevin Garnett, and the way the Bulls situation is in the offseason, it doesn't, you know, it just doesn't make sense anymore. It makes more sense to just wait it out, and if he opts out of his contract after next year, sign him at, you know, the mid-level or whatever, you know, cap room they have. It's not worth trading half the roster, which is what they would have to do. What the Celtics would have to do is not trade half the roster because they have Theo Ratliff, and that means they only need one or two more players as opposed to five or six.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think Minnesota would still demand two of those better younger prospects, and I'm not sure that it's worth it in the long run for this franchise, because the Celtics are built to last at this point. And, you know, if they hold on to these chips and this draft pick, I think that they can have success for a much longer period than, you know, packaging them all with Theo Ratliff. I mean, you said they only have to package a couple of guys. We're not talking about Ryan Gomes and Delonte West. We're talking about Al Jefferson and Gerald Green. To go with that contract. And at this point, you know, I'm willing to consider trading Gerald Green, although, you know, you just watch that kid and you know he's got a bright future. But Al Jefferson's pretty much untouchable by my standards. But
yeah, and, you know, we talk about young players, and the thing is, Tyrus Thomas was a guy I was more than willing to trade in most any trade scenario, and then he throws out a game like tonight. I mean, not to get too excited over one game, but you see the progress that Tyrus is making. And, I mean, it's more, the thing about Tyrus that I really like is that he already has skills that are, you know, impossible to teach. He is an amazing shot blocker, and it's not just his athleticism, it's just his timing is excellent. He's fearless. He's a great rebounder already. And he has his offensive game. I mean, we've seen Tyson Chandler as Bulls fans, and Tyrus Thomas is not Tyson Chandler in terms of complete offensive ineptitude. I mean, Tyrus can catch the ball well. His jump shot looks good, even though it's, you know, struggling to go in. Tonight he looked you know, they went in and they looked great, and he's so young, and it just seems you can see the potential there. So maybe he's a guy who they figure, you know, why package him and our salaries and our draft picks, you know, for another front court player, when who knows, maybe next year Tyrus Thomas is the Bulls' starting power forward, and with him and Ben Wallace, I mean, you already have a championship front court in terms of defense.
Amazing how quickly you recovered from the, you know, from trading away the once predicted second coming of the Twin Towers. It's incredible, and you know, that's a good thing for you Bulls fans, because I'm sure there was a semi state of panic, you know, as that all was approaching, and then getting Ben Wallace sure eased the pain.
Right. I mean, I think this is something that Celtics fans can learn too. I mean, just because a player is young doesn't mean he's going to get that much better. I mean, we kind of learned, we heard just because Tyrus and Eddie were 18 that they were going to, you know, blossom just because, just by virtue of being young, they were going to get better. But, I mean, they got somewhat better, and actually they're having great years now, but they're still limited as players. You can't just extrapolate it based on their
right.
young
you can't
in
take
four
their
years.
Numbers and
you can't
throw
take it for
it
granted.
On right now. Yeah, absolutely. Yep, and then it's all about complementary pieces too. You know, how do you fit the chemistry in together? How do all the players work together in an offense? And you know, Eddie Curry's playing for Isaiah Thomas. You know, and Tyson Chandler's playing with a wonderful point guard. You know, and on a team that's been suffering some injuries too. So his stats, you know, have also come filling in. During times of a depleted roster with David West and Chris Paul both out there for a while. So
right. I mean, and just to, not to go off on former Bulls too much, but, you know, I was a huge Tyson Chandler fan. I still am. I mean, he's a game changer on defense. I mean, he is, and a lot of people brought this up. I mean, he puts up comparable numbers to what Ben Wallace does now, and you look at their ages and you can tell where the trends are going. But the difference between the Bulls as a team with Ben Wallace is that now, you know, just by upgrading in stature from one player, Tyson Chandler, to Ben Wallace, all of a sudden the Bulls are the veteran team now. I mean, Ben Wallace gets calls that Tyson Chandler never would, and that's because, I mean, it's because of the player he is, but also because of his stature with the referees. And you see, you know, with a team of all young players, I mean, you're not going to get, there's no benefit of the doubt from the refs. There's very little, you know, cohesion. Things can unravel in a hurry. But when you get a guy like Ben Wallace, a superstar defender who, you know, has been in playoff wars and has that stature in the league, I mean, it just makes a whole difference for the whole team. And he can dominate a game where, you know, Tyson Chandler never could and maybe never will. I mean, even if on a by-game basis, Tyson Chandler has, you know, a better season than Ben Wallace, he doesn't bring the same... They're just a different team with Ben Wallace. And when Ben Wallace is playing well, like he is tonight, I mean, he has games where he hasn't played well this season, which is discouraging. But on games like tonight, you just say he transforms the team when he plays like that.
Yeah, and you know, I think with Ben Wallace, you have to keep in mind that he's playing with a new team. And, you know, he's a gamer. And when you guys are in the playoffs, you're going to see the best of Ben Wallace. And you make a really great point about youth not getting calls from the referees because they haven't established themselves in a league. I think it's an unfortunate reality, you know, that eliminates a lot of the parity, which makes, you know, other sports, you know, more interesting in some respects from year to year, you know, over the NBA. But at the same time, it is the reality of the game. And the Celtics, you know, that's where Theo Ratliff's contract hopefully will come in handy. They need another player that's going to get that kind of respect to really open things up for Paul Pierce. That and a healthy Wally Szczerbiak coming off the bench next season. And I do think inevitably he will. We'll see, you know, a little bit of, you know, things will open up. It would be nice to have a big man with some respect. And even Al Jefferson has started to get some respect from the referees. And, you know, that started to show up. And as well as, you know, it shows up in games like this when he's facing a Ben Wallace, where he's not going to get the benefit of the doubt. You know, hands down, that's going to go to Ben, especially in a home game. But, you know, the Celtics blog a bullied in the home and home over the last three nights. Tonight they fall 95-87, and I think that the Celtics put up a much better fight in this game than they did on Sunday night, Matt. I think you'd agree on Sunday night. Celtics basically just got dropped in the last 9 minutes. But tonight they kept on fighting and they hung in close, and they even had a little bit of control there right around the beginning of the third quarter.
Yeah, like I said, I mean, from a Bulls fan standpoint, it was kind of just that it was just a weird game. I mean, Ben Wallace and Tyrus Thomas providing most of the shots. Kirk Heinrich, Ben Gorin denied the ball or just not being assertive. I think in Gordon's case, a lot of it, Rondo did a good job, but Ben Gordon's the type of player who can do anything he wants on the court, so it's almost like you fault him for not putting up more shots. So I think in both games, the Bulls kind of, they didn't play their best, and they still won. And I think in terms of what we've seen this year from this team, that's actually a good sign, because a lot of times the Bulls have to play their perfect game to win games. So it's nice to know that they can, you know, be off a night and still play well and beat the teams they're supposed to beat, because that way we know they'll have that, you know, that extra step up in their level of play, where they can, you know, challenge and beat the Pistons, you know, the Cavaliers, the Wizards, the Heat. Like I said earlier, I think they are at that level. They just have to play their, they have to play their better game.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, Matt from bloggable.com joined us tonight. Make sure you go and check out his website. That's bloggable.com. Matt, thanks so much, and good luck in the playoffs, since we won't have to face you.
Thanks a lot.
Hopefully next year I won't be able to, I won't say the same thing.
Yeah, you know, all it takes is one guy, I think. If they get Odin, who knows? Anything, I mean, they'll be right up at the top.